London reeks transformations. The angry become docile, the querulous resigned. But in terms of women, it was generally believed that there was a downward draft. London was not a suitable place for women. Those who made a pact or compact with it were regarded as fallen. The earliest actresses upon the stage, for example, were considered as, quote, brazen and tarred, unquote. Certainly this was true of Eleanor Gwynne, whose, quote, pert vivacity, unquote, to use Macaulay's phrase, recommended her to Charles II. She was a genuine London type, quote, frank, unsentimental, unquote, according to the Dictionary of National Biography. Her behaviour was considered, quote, unedifying, unquote, while her remarks were often, quote, sharp and indecent, unquote. Quote, I am the Protestant whore, unquote, she once declared, and there is a famous scene of her cursing upon the stage at the spectacle of an almost empty house. She was, quote, indiscreet, unquote, and, quote, wild, unquote, and, quote, her eyes, when she laughed, became almost invisible, unquote. And she, a seller of perishable goods, like other women, herself perished young. Mary Frith, otherwise known as Moll Cutpurse, again became a figure symbolic of London itself. She was born in the Barbican in 1589 and quickly acquired a reputation for violent eccentricity. Her portrait became the frontispiece of Middleton's and Dekker's The Roaring Girl, a true story of city life, and depicts her in male clothes complete with pipe and sword. In fact, she generally dressed as a man and was well known for her stentorian voice. In the 21st century, this might be seen as a token of sexual identity. In fact, it was a token of urban identity, her behavior manifesting one of the most complicated but significant aspects of female life in London. By dressing in male clothes, she understood where the power of London lay. That is why she became more ostensibly masculine than any male. Yet there may be anxiety or misery involved in that pursuit. Mary Frith declared that, quote, when viewing the manners and customs of the age, I see myself so wholly distempered and so estranged from them as if I had been born and bred in the Antipodes. This strangely reflects the words of Aphra Behn, who died in a garret in 1689, not far from where Mary Frith was born, and who declared that, quote, all my life is nothing but extremes, unquote. She is now considered to be a harbinger of feminist consciousness in literature, having written novels, plays, pamphlets, and poems on a heroic scale, but, as the Dictionary of National Biography suggests, quote, she attempted to write in a style that would be mistaken for that of a man, unquote. Hence, she was accused of, quote, uncleanness, unquote, quote, coarseness, unquote, and, quote, indecency, unquote. But there was no alternative. It was the style of the city. They had to become, quote, unruly women, unquote, in the phrase of the period, in order that their identities or gifts might survive. The fate of ruly women in London did not materially alter during the 18th century. They were servants of the city in an almost literal sense, since it has been estimated that approximately one quarter of all women in work were engaged in domestic service. Others were employed in clothing and in hawking, in shopkeeping, or in laundry work. They were overworked and underpaid. There was also a certain pattern to their urban exploitation. As they grew older, they descended still lower into poverty and distress. The city hardened those whom it did not kill. Yet single women, among them widows and deserted wives, still flocked into the city as the only market for their unskilled labour. It is no coincidence that this was also the period of London's great commercial unfolding. As business and industry grew, the male presence of the city was rendered more powerful. So women were commercial objects, wearing such and such an amount of material at such and such a price, or they were rendered, quote, feminine, unquote, and, quote, pretty, unquote. The more straightforward and forlorn images of the late 17th century give way to idealized representations of the feminine by the middle of the succeeding century. There was a vogue for advice books, beginning in 1750 and reaching its peak in the 1780s, with titles such as An Unfortunate Mother's Advice to Her Absent Daughters and An Inquiry into the Duties of the Female Sex, in which the virtues of humility and obedience are continually encouraged. The purpose was to restrain or curb the natural power or instincts of women, all the more overtly displayed in the city. A distinction was often drawn between the city wife and the country wife, for example, the latter manifesting all the characteristics of docility and faithfulness which the former notably lacks. During the 18th century, the prejudice against actresses had faded. They were no longer considered, quote, coarse, unquote, or, quote, degraded, unquote, but, like Kitty Clive and Mrs. Pritchard, were allowed into the society of men such as Horace Walpole. There were many eminent women throughout the century. Lady Mary Wortley Montagu, Teresa Cornelis, Hannah More, and Mary Wollstonecraft among them. But although the pities of Hannah More raised her above any disapprobation, and indeed she exercised an influence not unlike that of an abbess in early medieval London, the careers of other celebrated women were beset by scandal and obloquy. Walpole wrote of Lady Mary Wortley Montagu, for example, that, quote, she is laughed at by the whole town. Her dress, her avarice, and her impudence must amaze anyone. She wears a foul mop that does not cover her greasy black locks that hang loose, never combed or curled, an old Mazarine blue wrapper that gapes open and discovers a canvas petticoat. Her face swells violently on one side and partly covered by white paint, which for cheapness she had brought so coarse that you would not use it to wash a chimney." Unquote. Mary Wollstonecraft, whose ingenious and suggestive A Vindication of the Rights of Women was written in Store Street off the Tottenham Court Road, was disparaged as a blasphemer and a whore. Her demands for female equality were dismissed as the tirade of an Amazon, and her life was marked by isolation and unhappiness. As William Sinclair has written in The Godwins and the Shelleys, quote, "At the end of the entry, left square bracket, in the Anti-Jacobin Review, right square bracket, for, quote, Mary Wollstonecraft, end quote, the reader is cross-referred to, quote, prostitution, unquote. But the single entry under that heading is, quote, See Mary Wollstonecraft, unquote. It will perhaps come as a little real surprise that the desire to control women occurred at times of panic and low financial confidence. It ought also to be recalled that there was a sense of impending change and disturbance in the air, and that the first intimations of revolution in France and America threatened the very existence of the state polity of, quote, old corruption, unquote. Mary Wollstonecraft's A Vindication of the Rights of Women was itself an aspect of that fervor, which may explain why females were never more derided than in the latter decades of the 18th century. It was another method of urban control.